So the shunting away from the extremities is one of these reactions that occurs. But the problem with like all these things that they talk about as preventative measures is that they may be not for the right reasons. They may give you a misunderstanding or a false sense of security. You definitely don't want to do anything dehydrated.
Seems like some of the reading I've been doing recently seems to have more emphasis on fluid volume for hurt divers. Somebody comes to the top and has a problem and he's laid out, you know, and you're trying to give him some sort of emergency medical care. Seems like IV, saline solution IVs and what have you, have a lot more emphasis in the general diving reading that I've been doing than it used to, say, 10 years ago. People seem to be a lot more concerned about the level of fluids than they ever did. I never really understood why.
Well, there's these guys that were diving in Mexico. What's their name? Big guy. What's his name? The deep diver, Dolishek, actually. With Dr.
Jim's
girlfriend. Yeah, Jim Bowden with his girlfriend. They were actually doing saline IVs before a dive to aggressively hydrate. And that would be taking it a little bit over the top, wouldn't they?
Well, the thing about you, when you look at guys like Bowden, the guy's like a practicing alcoholic. And he's totally out of shape.
The IV then.
We're not talking like, you know, a couple of beers. We're talking like, you know, fifth of whiskey at a time type of drunk. And the guy's like out of shape. He's a fat slob. He's just a mess. And he's got to be like 65 years old or something on top of it. You know, it's ridiculous. He does everything wrong. So, you know, I mean, they were using corticosteroids and, you know, IVs and every other stupid thing you can think of. And, you know, I figure it's a lot easier just to do the correct decompression. You know, get some, like, bosonic decompression for those dives. It's just totally ridiculous. Those kind of dives. Commercial diving, one found out a long time ago that if you're going to put somebody deep, you want to go down at 15 feet per minute. 15 feet a minute. So obviously these idiots trying to open circuit dive to 1,000 feet can't go down at 15 feet a minute because they don't have enough gas. You could do it if you supplied enough gas, but I mean, seeing how far you take a baseball bat up your ass. It's just stupid. You know, it's because, you know, you go to overdue on.
I never understood why they did open circuit down there anyway.
Trying to prove something stupid. I mean, if you go to Morgan City.
You go straight up and down.
Morgan City, in any bar, there'll be 20 guys in there that have been to 1,500 feet, you know, that day. You know? And they don't. I mean, it's like, it doesn't prove anything. It's just stupid. It's like trying to, like, put feathers on your arms and see if you can jump, fly out the window, you know? But,
maybe at the end of this, you're going to tell us about the Wawa story. I'm sure you guys know.
Well, anyway, starting with the deepest point of your dive, you know, you want to get the gas out in solution. So what we found is that if you start your decompression at 80% of your profile in atmospheres, that if that's your first conscious stop, then you're gonna be able to have a shot at eliminating the deeper gas. What you always want to do is you want to ascend no faster than 30 feet per minute. So the best way to do that is to physically stop every 10 feet. That way you know you've done it. You know, it's like look at it, stop, start up again and stop. You know, and basically that's 20 seconds at each 10 feet. So that you do right from the bottom. You do the 20 seconds. You hit 80% of your profile. So if your profile is 10 atmospheres, 80% is 8 atmospheres, you're like to what, 240 feet. So let's say you've gone from 300 to 240. Well, it's going to take you 2 minutes to get to that, you know, to the 240, and then you do, you know, but you've stopped every 10 feet, and then you stop. Then your stops from 80% to where you would normally intersect a Bowman model decompression curve. In other words, where a Bowman model would start, which is almost all these things are Bowman models. When you get to that point, between the 80% and that point, you pretty much equally divide your stops. And your minimum stop being 30 seconds, your maximum stop being 5 minutes for saturation. So it's not that demanding. Then you start your other stops. Of course, you have your gas switches in there. You want to use your optimal, you know, your standard gas switches. But it's real important. It's real important to get those stops in and get the gas out in solution and ease the, you know, the pressure relief process. As to what kind of result you're going to have at the much shallower depths and after the dive, it's going to be real key. If you don't do that, you're going to get, like, you know, skin bends, you know, you're going to get damaged bones, connective tissue, your muscles, maybe even certain muscles. Certain people have fat in their muscles, you know, in with the muscles, and then you'll get, like, an injury, like as if somebody punched you in the arm or the leg, you know, you get those kind of, and so you want to avoid that. As far as it, you know, your choice of bottom gases, high oxygen doesn't really do you any good. High partial pressures of oxygen don't really do you any good. The savings in decompression are offset by the risks of tox and the damage of the oxygen. The oxygen does tremendous damage. I mean, it's like breathing, you know, hydrogen peroxide or something, you know, or and superoxides and all these other, you know, extreme oxidants and free radical. You know, you're generating massive free radicals when you you're diving high partial pressure of oxygen. The other thing is that if you're not using a decompression gas and you're just diving a bottom gas, you're still better off substituting some helium, putting in some helium rather than jacking the oxygen up on a nitrox. The helium will give you a better result than just, one, by elimination of the nitrogen, easier to breathe, and by the fact that the gas comes out so easily, you know, moves in and out so easily. It's not a gas that's already in the body. you want to be especially careful if you're doing multi-day diving to keep your partial pressure down as much as possible, because the risk of tox comes in commercial and military experience. The risk of tox comes on second, third, fourth day diving of nitrox or high partial pressures, where, you know, nothing unusual is occurring with the dive. It's just you've reduced brain chemistry and caused other damage and reduced your resistance to the point where, you know, you're more likely to tox.
These profiles they give you for 24-hour CNS clocks are not good over a period of dives.
I wouldn't. I think if you're going to do multiple day diving, that you back your pressures way off. If you ever get a headache, back your pressures way off. If you get if your gas consumption starts getting too good, back your pressures off. Because you're building CO2 and you're tolerating CO2 is what's happening. And the combination of CO2 and multiple day exposure of oxygen is probably the bad formula. The CO2 mechanism is merely that it dilates the blood vessels in the brain that supply the brain and allows more rapid depletion of brain chemistry, among other things.
But air brakes, I don't know that I read in here or someplace else, but when you guys were doing the deep, then long decos, you were doing air brakes on your deco gas.
When you're switching to your first deep deco gas, you never really want to have high partial pressures on your deco gas at depth, because you don't want to spike. You don't want to spike your oxygen at depth, because if you do have a problem, you're not going to recover from it. You can't blow to the surface and then go back down from 200 feet successfully, if you're toxing or something like that. So you need to back off of the 1.6 partial pressure for decompression for your deeper stuff. And again, you know, you have to put some helium in the gas. You're coming off your deep, you know, your 30 foot a minute rate. You're on your back gas, and you reach your first deep stop. So maybe you have a gas there to switch to, or maybe you don't. But whenever you do, you've already been on a lower partial pressure. You're not spiking the partial pressure too much. And as you then take the new gas and breathe it, you're going to want to for the steps that have higher partial pressures, you're going to want to basically break, you know, take a little break every 20 minutes. For when the partial pressures are lower, as from the deeper stops, you don't really probably need to take a break till you get ready to switch to a high partial pressure gas. For example, if you did a 190 decompression gas, you probably wait till you got to 130 and do a break there before you go to 120 and breathe your 35% gas. Now, the effect of the lowering PPO2 as you go higher on each bottle gives you a similar effect. But to get a full reversal of what happens with oxygen is the lungs react to it. They don't like the high partial pressures. They try to add a layer of cells to protect themselves. So your transport gets worse. They then swell and generate fluid, which again lessens your transport mechanism. And you're also damaging, you know, scarring the tissue. The blood vessels constrict, and so even though you've got more partial pressure oxygen, you're not getting the full benefit because blood vessels are trying to hold it back, so it's not delivering for you. At the same time, you're not off-gassing as well from the tissues because of the constriction of the vessels. So what a break does for you is that if it's a low enough partial pressure break, in other words, the closer to normoxic, to what we're breathing right here, the more effective it's going to be in reversing out the vasoconstriction and the edema and the cell creation. And more importantly, if your timing is correct in doing it, you're going to prevent the full onset of those effects, which is what you really want to shoot for, because that's a more reliable way of doing it. To prevent, you know, you don't want to like get yourself pounded and then try to get rid of it and then pound yourself again. You want to relieve the condition. Now, what happens? What's the mechanism that's occurring, other than the correction or prevention of those other items, is as you go to the lower partial pressure gas and the vessels are able to dilate again, is now the gas can flow out of the tissues more easily into the capillaries. So you get good off-gassing during your breaks. So if you go back and forth between high partial pressure, which is effective until you react to it, and low partial pressure, which allows the faster exit from the tissues, your overall decompression will actually be quicker. So you don't have to add air, you know, back gas breaks to your deco time. I mean, if the stop is 20 minutes, it's 20 minutes of whatever you want to do. It doesn't require any more time because it's just as effective. And that's another reason that that using, you know, one gas for a range of steps is so effective, because of the changing partial pressure and gradient changing. If you just keep the partial pressure high, the model would tell you, well, your stops can be shorter. But it's an illusion, because the model is not accounting for the fact that the body's fighting that. You know, so that's why, you know, you see these electronic rebreather guys try to tell you that, well, you know, these guys never do a dive long enough to need a rebreather, let alone high partial pressure, any of this stuff. And then if they did, they'd know you can't do it. They'll tox. I mean, they'll be able to breathe. Or, you know, their lungs will hurt, like, you know, as if they've been breathing fire the next day. They'll, you know, be coughing stuff up, and they'll be, you know, hurting, and, you know, it's stupid. But you want to shoot for no diminution of vital capacity. You don't want to screw your lungs up, your blood vessels, your muscles, any of that stuff. You want, after you dive the next day, you want to feel exactly as you did before you dove. You don't want to be like, you know, not able to work out or not, you know, not feel good or whatever. You don't want any of that. So the way you decompress and your choice of gases is going to determine that. Now, as you get ready to switch to a high partial pressure gas, that's when you do your break.
Well, for these guys, they dive. What they get certified to right now is shallower, one deco bottle diving. So for them, it wouldn't really make any sense to make any breaks, or would it? Well, if they dive like 140 feet on a Nitrox 20 or a Trimix 21-35, and they do deco on a Nitrox 50. the decos are relatively short. You know, they stay maybe maximum 15 minutes on Nitrox 50 at 20 feet and do a couple stops before. Well, so would there be any benefit in doing a short switch to the Trimix, or would it more come into play when you do deeper dives and longer decompressions?
Well, the decompression is not going to be all that long in this case, but I would still break for 2 or 3 minutes off of every 20 in a situation like that. You know, now especially if, let's say, you had a Nitrox 50 and an oxygen,
right.
I would definitely break before I went to the oxygen.
Okay,
definitely do a back gas break. You know, so you're 30-foot stop, you do a back gas break, and then 20 feet, you do your oxygen. And then when you're on pure oxygen, you definitely don't want to let it go anything more than 20 minutes, even for a short dive in one stint.
What's interesting for these guys to know, too, is that we teach them, at GUI, we teach them standard gases.
Mm-hmm.
Standard gases for bottom mixes, standard gases for deco. Where do the standard mixes come from as far as, you know, what's the history behind Nitrox 50 as opposed to a Nitrox whatever, you know, Nitrox 40? Or
what we did, we started out, first of all, that most of the gas diving that, you know, was commercial or military, tethered diving, and they could pull these guys out and put them in a chamber. So they have ridiculous stuff like, you know, so you look at a Navy schedule, oxygen is 60 feet. Well, obviously they're not in the water. They'll mention that part. But they, and their weed out process is, if you tox at 60 feet, you're out of the program, you know. And
they look at you through a little porthole and wait to see if you twitch.
And if you get bent, you're out of the program. So everybody lies. Everybody says, no, I'm not bent, you know. So they have this, you know, seizure or fucking, you know, so they can't talk. Then they get, you know, that sounds like commercial and military. But the history of it was that they didn't really put much effort into it because they were doing a bizarre form of decompression. They're bringing these guys up, chambering them, and just treating them. Then they started wising up a little bit on these, you know, on commercial, mostly oil company diving, because they were damaging people, you know, and you can get away with the military, but not commercial. So they started modifying these, and that's where your real good decompression information came from, mostly Shell Oil UK when they developed the North Sea fields. That was the best information. That's where that guy David Elliott, that Bennett and Elliott, Physiology and Medicine Diving, David Elliott was chief medical officer for Shell. He's actually the chief medical officer for the European Diving Union now, but that's where, that was in the day of Bowman and Bill Hamilton, and all these guys were all, Hamilton was some, and some other guys were working on one system, and Bowman and these guys were working on another system. And it, you know, at first, they went with real long decompressions because, you know, they had forever to do it in their chambers. And they were scared, you know, they weren't screening the divers. So you have these, you know, commercial divers get drunk every night, and they're big fat guys, and you're out of shape, you don't know what they're doing. So they just went for, you know, and then they started realizing they had to, you know, change some of these things. When we started doing it, we just experimented, we had no clue. We went to Hamilton, we went to Shell Oil.
That's what the WKPP?
Yeah, Bill Gavin and I. We went to these guys, plus Gavin was in the military, you know, he was designing rebreathers for the Navy, so he had access to good information. So we were dicking around with this, and what we would do is try things and see what happens. And Gavin and I would try it, and that's how we found the helium. You know, right away, the helium below 30% was a waste of time. We found that, Jared and I found that as we pushed the helium up, that on everything, and included everything, that the whole process came out, you know, the dive went better, and the decompression was cleaner.
What went better in the dive? Like,
well, you don't fuck up. You don't
like
make mistakes.
Went better as,
but you don't realize you're making mistakes until, like, we were diving Nitrox as a travel gas at 140, 50 feet, and then switching to Trimix to go deep. Well, when we come back the other way on our Trimix, the Nitrox bottles would be, like, not clipped to the line, not turned off, regulator laying in the dirt, sprayed all over the place. And Jared and I, every time, we'd swear somebody was fucking with our bottles. You know? And we finally figured out it was us, you know? And then, like, Jared, that's it, we're not diving that shit anymore. I mean, it's amazing, you know, when you realize, you look like, who's the stupid fuck that did this, you know? And what Gavin and I did is we started out with what did we use? We tried 50%, 40% in oxygen. We used 40%, 50% in oxygen. The 40 makes you start at a shallower depth, though, than 35 or whatever. And then, first we did 40% in oxygen, not 50. We did 40 in oxygen, and we got people getting bent. So Gavin and I threw in a 40-50 in oxygen. That stopped the getting bent. Then we decided we need to start that stuff a little deeper, so we went to 35%, just moved it deeper. Then we were using, at that time, air from 190 to decompress on. That was better than not doing any deco there. But it was problem as it was saying, you're fucked up, and it was causing damage, which you can't adequately decompress from. So what Jared and I did then was start adding helium into that gas. And then, it's more obvious that a 240 gas needs helium than it is a 190 or 180 gas. But from all perspectives, that turned out to work better. And then we just played with the shape of the decompression to see where we had the best result. And we started, stopping deeper and deeper, and we kind of found the magic point. And we got the right shape. We discovered, what we did with Hamilton and Shell Oil is like, they give me a schedule, and I'd send it back to them. I'd go, I want these stops to be total, 80 minutes shorter. What can you do? And they're saying, well, if you were to do this, this, and this, it might work. So we try that, and then we modify it again. We go back and say, okay, that worked. We want to string it out even more. We want to eliminate a lot of the unnecessary stuff. And we ended up eliminating a massive amount of steps in the intermediate range that were totally unnecessary. What happens with these models is they tend to pyramid their own safety factors. And you're starting with gradient factors and transport factors that are not necessarily accurate and are a little bit padded to start with. And then you add safety factors and other silliness. And pretty soon you've got the thing padded away from reality. And it has a diminishing return for you. In other words, if you're off-gassing at a step, you're off-gassing, and then if you stay there, it starts going like that, and then you start on-gassing. So, what we do from the deeper steps to try to get the gas out in solution, and then as you approach the shallower steps, you want to press the gradient a little more to get a better off-gassing. Now, as you're shallower in the water column and pressing the gradient, you, especially real shallow, you'll start off-gassing in bubble form. In other words, not bubbling in the tissues, but bubbling into the bloodstream. That's the most efficient way of off-gassing at that point, because it's eliminated so well by the lungs. So you have this high-speed off-gassing. So what I did was then shorten things like the 40-foot stop dramatically and just used all leverage of the gradient and bubbled. Now, you don't want to get out of water like that, because if you do have any shunt in the heart or the lungs or any of these bubbles get by, they're going to expand in the arterial side and block and cause strokes or embolism or horrifying stuff. So you can slim down the upper steps, and if you look at Bruce Winkie's stuff. Winkie's he's a physicist for the government of Los Alamos, nuclear physicist actually, and he likes to dive and do he's a crazy guy. He's a real good guy. He has this incredibly good model for a bubble mechanics model that explains a lot of this action pretty well. And his decompressions, he and I look at each other's, and his actually conform pretty well to what I do, except that for the fact that I allow bubble off-gassing at certain stages of the deco. And Bruce's 40-foot stop will be long, mine will be abbreviated, because I know I'm bubbling. I intend to. So if you get up, as you get through those parts of the deco, you get to your oxygen or your upper levels, you want to, give yourself some time at that stop, that whatever is required, right? And then you want to work your way to the surface at a slow, steady rate. because the if you just get out of the water after the dive, you're going to start. You have a zero. You know, like your zero stop now. You just move to another deco stop. You're off gassing rapidly in bubble form into the lungs, whatever gas is left. And at that point, you're exerting, walking around. You don't want to trigger a shunt and have it bypassed. Also,
how do you trigger shunts? By lifting heavy objects?
Well, if you did have a PFO, and 30% of the population have them, you know, like certain, like bending like that could push the heart this way. If you push the heart this way, the flap between the two atria can open, you know, like that, against the wall. So you don't want to do anything that pushes the heart that way, which is diaphragm, coughing, taking a piss, bending over like that. You just want to be careful for a few minutes. You want to let that dissipate. The best way to do that, though, is to make your ascent from your last deco stop, let's say 20 feet to the surface, a smooth, steady process. Now, on a saturation dive, it would be a foot per minute with your ascent rate. So, and you know, you obviously on a 30-minute bottom time at 140, you don't want to take 20 minutes to go from 20 to the surface, but maybe 6 minutes, something like that. You know, 30 seconds at each. 20 seconds at each foot.
As you attack bottom timers, really slow you down in that last 20 feet. There's a, I don't know what it is, 7 feet, 10 feet, something like that. But it's not 30. That last 20 is way slower than 30.
You know, it's relatively the same thing, you know, as you get higher up. But you want to do your bubbling, off-gassing in bubble form while you still have pressure on you. And you want to, you know, and you have a, you know, oxygen or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you get to the surface, you want to just take it easy momentarily. You know, let everything, you know, stabilize. It takes a couple of minutes for the blood to circulate completely through the body. So anything you do, it's going to take at least 2 minutes to see the benefit of it. You know, so, and 5 minutes, after 5 minutes, if you've screwed up, you should feel it. After 2 minutes, you won't, but, you know, at least you'll.
I was surprised to see that some gentle work is actually recommended, as opposed to no work at all.
Well, you don't want to have vessels shut down. You know, you don't want to like totally. You want to keep circulation going, because you still are. You know, you're off gassing from the tissues into the blood. So if you if your vessels start to shut down, it'll bubble in the tissues because you're on the surface. You have no pressure. So that's generally. It's just the type of things. You just want to be careful. I mean, you want to treat yourself as if you have a PFO or a shunt. Just, you know, so you don't get a bad surprise. I mean, I've been tested for one. I don't have one, supposedly, and I've never had anything like that happen, but I still act as if, you know. Because who knows? I mean, it's, you know, who knows? I mean, you know the way the human body works before we're born. That thing's open, and the blood doesn't go through the lungs. It goes right through the heart because you're getting oxygen from the placenta. So all humans are made that way. So this is an unnatural thing to be doing for human beings. So, you just have to keep that in mind. The
it's not the first unnatural thing I've done.
In the some of these decompression steps, you know, the first, you know, stop at the higher partial pressure, you want to extend that beyond what the models say. Because as you have higher partial pressure, your model will tell you need less steps, less time, because of the higher partial pressure. Well, extend that and shorten the upper steps. So you know how they'll get bigger? Stops will get bigger as you go up. Well, just extend the initial one and then take away from the upper ones, because you want to use the gradient there, because you don't have the partial pressure, so why sit there forever?
Or any
get it out deeper.
Any of the recreational agencies adopting deep stop algorithms?
Well, they're all starting to suspect that ascent rates are a problem. And I think a lot of them have gone to 30 feet.
They're talking about deep stops.
Well, they don't like, you know, they tend to, these recreational guys, they tend to think that they know things that they don't know. And they tend to want to, they don't want to give any credit to guys like us, because it takes all their credibility away completely. Because they've made so many mistakes in the past, which they're still covering up by not changing, you know. I mean, half these idiots are recommending diving 1.6 partial pressures of oxygen for your bottom gas. I mean, TEI, I don't know what that, they're still doing it.
IETD.
I mean, it says, and that is despite the fact that Mount has had a couple of deaths in classes where guys swimming in dry suits on 1.6 partial pressure have toxed. I mean, where he, and he doesn't want to change it because he's afraid he's going to get sued. I mean, just, you know, the guy's going to get sued anyway. So he does, these guys all do stuff like that. They all try to hold hands and maintain the stupidity, you know, their past mistakes, you know, cover their past mistakes. Now he's not so bad, but now he's a whole lot, you know, more. You can tell the difference between now and these other guys because now he has a loose leaf manual. So you can change the pages. You know what I mean? It tells you right away. You know, if they know, they got it. And Jared's shit's online, so he can change it anytime he, you know, he has, it's in the, you know, he changes it all the time. But, you know, Patty and these other idiots, they don't change anything. And Malph, obviously, he paints himself into so many corners, he can't change. But,
yeah, they teach 1.6 and only backing off if it's cold or strenuous.
Only back off if you talked, right? It's just the guy, those guys just have no clue, you know, because what he's thinking is that this somehow is going to make you less likely to get bad if you jack the oxygen way up. But that's not the correct answer. I mean, you don't take on an unacceptable risk to moderate an acceptable risk. And, I mean, you can tell with those guys that their thinking isn't correct. So, you know, basically what happens is, you know, I'm pretty radical about this stuff, but I see it. I mean, for the kind of diving we do, I mean, you have to be totally. I mean, you have to have your shit together. You have to have it right. But the reality is that any diving, it goes from being a fun, entertaining sport to, you know, going to, you know, something that can kill you by virtue of the details. So why not just do it right?
Yeah, well,
and, you know, and that's what these other guys don't understand. They think, oh, you know, it's like, you know, you don't have to, it's not necessary, you know, do whatever you want and all this stuff. And so they turn something that's, you know, it'd be like if you said, okay, on the highways, you know, they got the fucking stop signs and stop lights and, you know, throw the hammer down, do whatever the fuck you want, you know. That's what these guys are saying, you know.
The 1.6 might come from recreational diving where they want to avoid deco at any cost.
Yeah, these guys don't want to do deco. They think that that's going to mean no deco, but it's not necessarily the case. And the problem is that while that may be, you can get away with that for a 20-minute dive. you guys start diving more and you start doing other things, and Tom Mount told you 1.6, and you do a 2-hour dive at 1.6 and kill yourself, you know?
You know, what they're trying to do is leave 130 as the diving range with a 32 mix, and they have to put 1.6 on there to make that work. They have to back it off.
Well, look at your... you know, you look at your costs associated with teaching people to dive using compressed air, they're non-existent. And, you know, if you look at, you know, the cost of what Thomas teaches, it's horrendous, it's huge. You know, it's a lot that goes into it, the gear and the gas and the preparation, the time and the detail. So, I mean, these guys, Patty and Tom Mount and the rest of them are trying to do something that's cost-effective for the lowest common denominator out there of instructors that don't need to be teaching in the first place. Yeah, they've got 5,000 instructors.
They don't need the facilities, they don't need, you know, all the logistical problems.
Well, they don't need the diving. And Nitrox, I went around, I live in Tampa, and I started going around to all the shops out there and asking, where does this magic 1.6 number come from? Not one instructor I asked could give me a straight answer. Not one. And it also asks where we teach. That's PO2. I said, yeah, that's PO2. What are you talking about? And nobody gave me an answer.
We don't say that.
Where actually does come from is a 1.6, a 1.6 and below resting appears to be the line in the sand for tox and no tox. 1.4 is the level which you really don't see, your incidence of tox basically disappear for short exposure. And obviously, as you extend your repetitive dives or your duration of your dive, you want to keep driving that number down. We're diving 0.8s and 0.9s now for longer stuff. But with the presence of helium and the use of decompression gases for a longer dive, your decompression process way overcomes the result you would get if you dove a higher partial pressure throughout. So it's actually, you know, it just doesn't make any difference. You just, it's just that 1.4 is a real line in the sand for commercial. I mean, they try to press some of these guys at up near 1.4 working, like I'm walking a pipe, welding underwater, standing on a pipe, and a pipe might be as big as this room, might be 10 feet high. And these guys have, you know, they're tethered, helmeted, they have a camera, voice, you know, they're welding stuff. And some of these oil company guys have told me that they'll get a guy that falls off the pipe 10 feet and toxins. You know, it's like, whoa. Okay, sitting there welding, you know, for hours, and then he steps off the pipe, drops to 120 feet instead of 110 feet in toxins. And they're sitting there controlling his, you know, holding him at 1.4. And so, if, of course, he's in the helmet, and he's, you know, nothing happens to him, but still, it's like ridiculous. It fucks up the, you know, you gotta take him out of water, so another guy, you know. But it's like, that's how critical it is sometimes. And that, and you can see how extended exposure and repetitive exposure appear to be the culprits. Mm-hmm. But a lot of what's taught, so what really needs to be taught in diving is why this stuff is the way it is, and then what you have to look out for, what the problems are going to be, so that as you change your diving and approach different types of situations, you know how to adjust accordingly. And not, you know, you don't just, like, you learn from mouth, you go out and dive 1.6 forever, and, you know, you're going to hit the brick wall. Just like everything else with this gear and the rest of the silliness he teaches, it doesn't work. When you add things to your dive, and you try to do different types of diving, their answer is to, like, come up with different, you know, gear for different dives and different crap instead of having it, like, all there to start with, you know, all in place and ready to go.
Yeah, very different question. Do you take things during or before a dive to make it easier on your body? Like you said, you use potassium.
I've used ibuprofen and Feldene.
What's the last one?
Feldene, it's...
Are there
anti inflammatory? No, there isn't anything inflammatory. Just to prevent an immune reaction. I've done it, but I did it when I was experimenting with the deco.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I was figuring I was probably going to get hit. And I wanted to moderate my reaction to it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But I never did, so I pretty much then, as I saw the deco work, I stopped doing it.
Okay, you also don't need anything when you're bubbling at 40.
Mm-hmm. No, the...
How about people? I hear about people taking ibuprofen after a dive. That seems to be a little bit...
Or aspirin.
Well, it's kind of late at that point. But
it's a bit too late, isn't it?
You know, what Jared and I used to do is take them in the water at deco. We didn't bother doing them because they wear off the length of our dive. It's longer than the ibuprofen will last. So we do them... I just keep up a little bag of them, and you can actually... They'll hold long enough that you can eat them. But it turned out to be unnecessary. But it doesn't cause any problems at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not dangerous or anything. Some of the other guys were drinking, all kinds of concoctions they made up, sports drink type stuff, with all kinds of crazy shit in it. Ted Cole and Chris Warner. They were doing every trick in the books. But one thing that you do want to be aware of in the subject of eating and drinking, you generally don't want to become hypoglycemic while you're diving. In other words, you don't want your blood sugar to drop, because that has been associated with tox. Not to mention, you feel like shit, and you're hungry, and you're it's otherwise screwed up. And keep in mind that if you do take sugar, pure sugar, like a Gatorade or anything, if you do take sugar, that this will cause your blood sugar to rise rapidly and your insulin to rise to meet it, and it'll come off rapidly. So you basically, if you're going to do sugar underwater, you better do it every the longest you can go is 45 minutes without replenishing, and you probably should do it every 20. Once you start doing it. What I do is generally I eat before the dive. Right before the dive, I eat a bunch. And then... and make lasts a long time, and then I have stuff in the water. Yeah. And I have a camelback full of Gatorade on a deco bottle.
Do you eat things?
Yeah, you can eat like bars and stuff in the water.
Yeah.
It's annoying, but
yeah.
But once you get up in the trough, you can eat sandwiches, regular stuff. But it's, yeah, you definitely, when you're dealing with a, you know, a long decompression or high partial pressures or other stresses, you don't, you want to make sure you've got, think about that sugar thing. Low blood sugar increases the risk of tox.
Another different question.
Yeah.
You mentioned on email that for repetitive diving, the last dive of the day you would use oxygen rather than 50%.
Well, if I was doing two dives to 240 feet, let's say, I don't want to, you know, burn myself up with repetitive oxygen exposure. And I'm going to have a short surface interval and go back and recompress anyway. So what I would do is I would use the 50% bottle on the first dive all the way up. Mm-hmm. And the second dive, I'd use 50 and the oxygen.
Just for these guys,
because you're not getting back in, you know.
Yeah. And for example, 140, 150 foot dive, with the bottom times around 25 minutes, nitrox 50 seems to be a more logical gas. Yeah. But they use that for every dive. They wouldn't use oxygen after a while. Or
well, you can use oxygen or 50. The good thing about 50 is that it's going to give you a good partial pressure.